Welcome everyone back to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Today, talking with Sunny Singh. I'm assuming I pronounced that correct, right?
You did.
Yo, wicked awesome guy, by the way, coming straight out of Dedham, Massachusetts. You know, don't say anything wrong. We'll hit you with the, I don't know, soap bar and sock or something, you know? You running into any of those people over there?
Whipping out the Boston accent there?
Yo, I grew up in Worcester, dude. I grew up in Worcester, which is like, yeah, I don't know. Don't you guys make fun of Worcester or something? Someone's got to make fun of Worcester. And there's got to be some Worcester jokes or something. But
yeah, there's that, was it the Adam Sandler album from back in the 90s? Welcome to Worcester. $1.45.
$1.45, please. Hey, yeah. Father Michael. Or it's so bad. Oh, yes. You've brought me back in time. So, IT director, I don't know how many, how'd you get started in IT, by the way? Let's just go there. You know, you're in Boston. I don't know what happened. What was it, been 20 years ago or how long ago was it that you got into IT? Let's see. I can maybe do a little bit of cyber stalking here. Technical analyst back in 2010. Yeah. Let's see. What's your journey been like prior to back in the, did you ever have a BlackBerry?
I did. Funny story. Growing up, I was always the nerdy kid. I was always into gadgets. It started with calculators, TI-83, downloading the games onto the calculators, all that kind of stuff. It's kind of dumb, but started with that. Grew into a love for cell phones. I worked in sales in the telecom industry for a little bit.
Where was that?
I was actually one of those mall rats in the we'd be at the kiosks in the middle of the mall.
Yeah, Lord, loved it. Oh yeah, you guys were hardcore. You guys are the hardcores. Yeah. You were the one that you would like point at someone randomly like 100 yards away, like, yeah, you over here. What do you got? Hey, what kind of phone you got, man? What's going on?
That's 100%. That's so accurate. We call that
No, what do you got there? Is that an iPhone? Is that iPhone 11? Oh man, that's gross, dude. Fine. You need like an iPhone 13. Come on, just come over here. What are you paying?
I go a little further back than that. We were just Nokia flip phones and like color screens had just come out. That was a big thing. But the greeting, we had a saying, you don't greet, you don't eat, right? You don't have enough money to go to food court. You don't have any commissions, go to food court, get yourself a nice burger.
We did the finger.
You won't see on the podcast, but we had one guy who just put up his finger very delicately, gentle, miss, excuse me. Yes, you. Yeah. One second. We call it the finger. Second, miss, please. One second.
Yeah.
And it would always work.
Okay. So my first, okay. This is going to be fun. I can already tell this is going to be fun because I had my first gig was, outside of retail. I was a Starbucks store manager and I was like, I can't do this for the rest of my life. I'm going to be miserable. Right. So I took a job at a Cisco startup and it was like hardcore business to business sales. And I remember like the first day, I'm like, what did I getting myself into? And I was like, well, I don't know, but if I don't greet, my family's not going to eat.
That's right.
So I learned right away, like how to sell this, like, Cisco 2800 series IAD to small businesses and this whole package. We're like, hey, have you ever thought about accessing your files from home? They're like, no, what's that? It's this crazy thing. It's called a VPN. And and we're like, hey, are you backing up your files? What's that? No, you don't know. What do you mean you don't back up your files? Like, well, for only $400 a month, we're going to give you 256 megs or something.
$400 a month.
Messed up. But like, I really kind of like cut my, like, I don't know, feed or whatever on really helping small businesses. And because I came from running a small business and running a really like a coffee shop that did like 1.2 million a year, like I really knew P&Ls and how to help small businesses use technologies. To me, like, I was like really passionate about it. But we had a guy on my team that was the cell phone kiosk guy in the store, and I loved it. And we used to laugh. We used to just talk so much. Like, yeah, you. He used to do the finger, but he would just point at someone like as far away as possible. Like, you. And they'd be like, what? What do you mean, me? Yeah, you. Come here. And we're like, what kind of phone you got there, And tell me a crazy story. You must have a crazy story. You must have crazy people. They probably hired everyone that was willing to take the job. You must have some crazy stories. Come on, best story.
Best story. It was... I'm not going to use
sales
name,
but my, I should start my a podcast. I should start a podcast that's just crazy sales stories ever believe, you know, and it would be hilarious. It would put The Wolf of Wall Street to shame. It would put that movie to shame. And I hate people that like are like scumbag, like, you know, just like, you know, I truly do believe that America was built upon like good commerce and good salespeople. And I also believe that the 80% of all the salespeople in the world probably have ruined it for the rest of the people that actually are sales professionals and good high character people. But with that being said, I want to hear the craziest sales story.
All right. I got one for you. This is a funny one. So we had this kid who, you know, he made a lot of sales, but he was the guy who would say anything to close the deal. Mm-hmm. He would say anything. He would do anything. He would straight up lie, just like everything.
Oh, terrible.
So I was doing this back in, you know, when I was doing cell phones. This was before, you know, global. This was before GSM. GSM had just come out. It was, yep. You know, you use your cell phone in your state, right? And then there was like long distance. And then there was like out of network.
Nights and weekends.
Back after 8, I got minutes. I got to go. That was it. You know, it wasn't a national or even global thing. So to like travel with your phone outside the country was like this big thing. It was the worst. So we had this guy come up. He was traveling to the Middle East, and he's talking to this guy. He's like, you know, I need this and that. I need to be able to go to, you know, the Middle East. I'm going next week. I need to, you know, do something. I need to, you know, communicate.
So oh, no problem. You're all set, bud. You're all set. We got him. We got you.
100. But that's exactly what the guy said. He comes up, he pulls out the cheapest, like crappiest phone. And he's just like, oh yeah, this will do the thing. It's actually free on promotion right now. It'll work for you over in Egypt. I'm like, what? What? So this guy, man, the gears were turning because he knew when the guy was leaving because he told him. And then he figured out, you know, through the conversation, how long he's going to be there. So already he knows by the time the guy gets back, return period's over. It's out of his hands. He's done. His commissions are locked. So this guy sells him this phone, leaves, takes off. Most people would never come back. They call the company like, hey, this guy sold me this, that, another thing, fix it. This guy comes back to the crazy guy.
Yeah, who grew up in the streets, probably, because I know some Egyptians and I know some other guys too. I have a lot of friends in the Middle East, and they grew up in some areas where no. Anyways, go ahead.
The guy comes back and he's like, you know, you sold me this thing. What are you doing? What are you doing? And the guy was just like, oh, you know, yeah, we'll swap it out for another one. Something must have happened. And he keeps it going. And he had the guy coming back like 2-3 times. It was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. The worst. But I'll tell you one thing though. I started in sales. That was my first sales gig. And I kind of like got a hunger for it.
Yep.
Did a couple internships, you know, got into software sales, that sort of thing. Cold calling, B2B, just like bottom of the barrel. And that's what kind of got me into tech. I remember I was at my internship. It was over in Waltham. And I was on the sales side, and I was, you know, I would walk around, talk to some of the IT guys, and I would almost like notice they weren't doing anything. They were just like there, like hanging out, mildly working. I'm like, I wonder.
No one knows who they are.
No one knows what they do. Yep. And I was, you know, I remember thinking like, man, what are you guys doing all day? Like, I wonder, this looks really interesting. Like, do they just like help people when they call up and it's like a quick fix? Like, I wonder. So I started, you know, paying a little bit more attention to them, talking to a few more people, and, you know, found out that it's not that busy of a job and they make more money than we do and it's guaranteed. I'm like, oh man, like I don't have to dial out 70, 80 calls a day. Like, and I still don't get paid because it's an internship. So it was nuts. So that kind of got me thinking. And then all of a sudden I was like, you know what? And at the time I was in college finishing up my bachelor's, and I was like, yeah, I'm not really like learning anything technical. Like I can't like take what I'm learning in the undergrad and apply it to the real world. I can't like go into a job employer's office and be like, I can do X, Y, and Z. It's like, no, I can talk to you about ideas I learned. I don't know how to do a thing. I'm like, that's a problem. So at that moment, I was like, all right, I'm going to trade school. Let's figure this out. I went to trade school for computer networking, got my 3 certifications, and that kind of started my journey into IT. I took what I learned on the sales side, combined it with my love for gadgets and all things technical, and it turned out to be a pretty unique combination.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime. No, it's actually very, very, very key, because one of the themes that comes up on the show a lot is selling to the executive C-suite, selling the value of IT, being able to show technology as a business force multiplier. But not only that, knowing what you know, here's the thing, that nothing in the company gets done without IT involved, right? IT touches everything. It touches everything. So why should the IT director, CTO, whoever it is, is IT director, IT manager, not have a seat at the executive roundtable? And why should the executive management not want the opinion of the IT director? Now, here's the thing. The IT directors that don't know how to sell, that don't know how to talk to people, that struggle talking with end users and all this type of stuff, have to learn how to sell. You already had that.
Yeah, that was definitely a leg up. And in early years, that was really the differentiator. Like I presented very well in front of an audience, in front of decision makers, in front of executive teams. That wasn't weird for me, where all my other colleagues were like scared to death and had no idea how to engage in that space. So that was a big differentiator.
So what's the tips? Because like in the last chapter or the middle chapter of my book, I did like some basics on like, hey, just keep it simple, stupid when you're presenting, you know, what the costs are now, what the costs are after, what the return on investment is, the bullet points of the benefits that we're going to get. We're going to see increased 10%, 11% increase, efficiency here and there. Is there any, like, what are your tips to presenting when you go to the executives? Or is it meeting with them before, finding out what their needs are? And then, you know, like, what's kind of your sauce?
That's a great question. You got to do both. You got to get as much background information up front before that initial meeting. Ideally, my approach, like when I think of like, okay, what does a home run meeting look like? Like what is the pie in the sky, like the gold standard of an executive meeting, a presentation, a sales meeting, whatever you want to call it. To me, that's me coming into that meeting, initially understanding at a very, very deep and simplistic level the problem we're trying to solve with the software, with this thing, with the service, whatever it is, and presenting it in a way that resonates with the executive team. So if you can speak to that problem, and that problem being the one that they are facing, the one that they are currently living through, and you can speak to the struggles of that and how this product, the service, whatever it is, can solve that, you're already ahead of the game. You're connecting those dots for them instead of presenting data in a way that anyone else can do. And they usually just read off a slide deck. It's a canned PowerPoint. Maybe the company's logo is there. It looks kind of nice, you know, but it's the same stuff. It's just numbers and stuff. It's all disconnected. But if you can weave those together in a very simplistic way and say, look, we understand the problem you're facing. We see it a lot. It is this. We see a lot. We talk to people all day long that have this problem that don't even know that this is the core of the problem. But we've put an exhaustive amount of research and, you know, time into solving this specific problem. And we're going to break, and we have the ability, we're the only one in the market that can bring that ability to you directly with that knowledge in hand. And we can customize the solution directly for you and to solve your immediate problem. If you can present it like that, most CEOs are going to lean forward and be like, okay, tell me how, show me, I want to see.
Yeah. So it's like the title of your presentation to your C-suite should be the number one problem X. And the solution to the number one problem, it's almost like you can't have too many things going on at one time.
You want to simplify.
You got to drill down to one. You got to drill down to one thing. And what's your level of communication look like with the C-suite? Or how would you suggest to our listeners or people that may have a little bit of a maybe disjointed or separated, or even people that are, they've got a great relationship, but we just want more ideas. what's the best way to uncover said problems and then provide solutions to them?
Before
when, when you're all working in the same company, you know, when you're all working in the same company.
Yeah, right? It's a fantastic question. And this is like a case study that you could write another book on. Like, how do you do this? This is a huge topic. It's fantastic. I find that you're always selling. ABC, always be closing. It's just a matter of defining what are you closing. In the IT space, this is it's not even about at that level, it's not even about the technology. It's about the people, it's about the business, it's about the data, right? How can you, I think of it as like the company is a spreadsheet on the filter, right? The C-suite, a lot of the time will come to IT with a lot of raw data, a lot of raw requests. I need this to happen. I need that to happen. We need to get this going. We need to connect this and we need these reports out there. My first question to all that is why? Why do you want that? Explain to me what the problem, right? We put it in the framework of problem solution. What is the problem you're experiencing? I will help you walk through this. And if you look at any sort of sales or problem solving methodology out there in sales, a lot of these sales guys tap into this a lot. And I follow a lot of them on YouTube and socials. They're very good at putting this sort of methodology into a framework and then teaching that. It's fantastic. But if you put them into a problem solution framework, it becomes very simple. You define the problem and then you have a singular solution or you have recommendations. Option one, two, or three. Which one would you like to go with? Each one of them addressed.
That's what I say. Good, better, best. Never exactly. Do you want this or you do you not? We need to upgrade and migrate this, I don't know, server to the cloud. Here's option one. Here's option two, option three. There, one option that's not on the table is not doing it.
Yeah.
That option's never on the table. The option of doing nothing is not an option, right?
Yep. Well, sometimes it's the best option. It honestly really depends what the initial ask is. I've been in situations in not just one company and throughout my career, multiple places, it's very common where the initial ask is just, it doesn't make sense. Technically, it's just not a good, choice, right?
It's like a make-believe solution. It's like, I kind of see it as doing this and this is what I want it to do.
Yeah. It's almost like a biased decision-making process. Like, oh, I want to save money. So we're going to bring our server that's in the cloud. We're going to bring it back on-prem. We're going to save some money on licensing. We're going to increase control. It's like, that's a
term. I just want
a
no code. So I just want to use email as our CRM. And can you just give us like a, can you give us like an AI? And what I want is an AI bot to search all my email for the customer information when I need it. And we're just going to get rid of Salesforce. How about that?
Yeah. Again, back to my original point. If you put that scenario into a problem solution framework, enforcing the person to identify the problem, or better yet, articulate the problem, it puts us as IT professionals in a much better position to succeed and to be able to solve the problem, not only from the business case, but also from the technical side.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot. I want, because I know what the problems, I've done enough of these interviews over the times that I know what IT directors' problems are. Well, first of all, just hypothetically speaking, how many end users do you have? Or how big of an organization are we managing?
Biggest or current?
Whichever, pick one. I don't care. Just give me a number.
All right, so the largest environment I've managed is about 1,200 end users.
Okay. In that environment, you had 1,200 end users. Were you the top tier? Was there a CTO or were you IT director? What was your situation there?
I was actually middle. I was middle, okay. middle of the ladder.
Okay. So there was 1,200 people. My guess is you had a team of between 10 and 12 people on your IT team.
Three.
That's a nightmare.
Perfect. It was actually not. It was actually very good. And it was a fantastic, I'll tell you why. It was a fantastic use case for efficiency.
Well, then I'm going to love this. I'm going to absolutely love this. And you're going to have to like fend the recruiters off. but was it like a software dev team or was it like, I mean, were all these end users drivers or something? I mean, come on.
No. Funny enough. I mean, it was actually a school. So there were all students, faculty, staff.
Okay. So, well, let me ask you this. When it comes to your role as an IT director, in all the things that you have to manage, on a daily basis, what's your biggest struggle, frustration, problem, or concern?
You know, the day-to-day doesn't really
whole job in general. I don't care if it's stress level. I don't care if it's work life balance. I don't care if it's like I'm unhealthy. I've got a pinched nerve in my neck. I don't care what it is. What is your biggest struggle, frustration, problem, or concern? I want to know. First thing that comes to mind.
For me, it's turning it off. And it's a double-edged sword for me because what?
Yes.
And this sounds a little arrogant, but what makes me so good at what I do is that I'm always thinking about the job. I'm thinking about the next thing, the previous thing, the thing that's going on right now, how that thing is going to impact the next thing. And it's just constant at all times of the day. I can't shut that off. That's just how I'm wired. As I've progressed through my career, it comes at a sacrifice, the kids, the family.
I know the answer to that. It's very profound too. It's very profound.
I'd be interested to hear that.
It's very profound because I learned it. And what I did was I decided I'm going to work from every, it depends on the job, right? Because you might not have this, luxury. Like you may not be like a work from home type of company, but I only had this luxury after I quit corporate America and ran my own company. But so when you're an entrepreneur, it's even worse, right? It's even worse. It's like you can never shut up. So if you're kind 24/7. Of an over, if you're kind of an overachiever type of person, which is what I've always been, my biggest problem is, I can't shut it off. And people have always told me, Phil, slow down. Like the biggest thing is like slow down. Don't be so hard on yourself. Calm down. The best thing I did was leave the country, go somewhere else for 3 months, take my whole family with me, and work from home in a different time zone in an area where it's a country that's not so high paced as like America, and surf, do jujitsu, and kind of just still do your job, but don't be so, rigid with your like crazy scheduling and everything. And what I found was that I kind of totally let go and I let some other people like kind of take over the spots that I might be like kind of overly like paranoid about, I guess, if that makes sense. And this was maybe, And what I found out was that nothing bad happened and more got done.
Sounds like
it's weird.
It sounds like a lesson in delegation almost.
Yeah, it was delegation. But you know what else I noticed is that a lot of my day is spent, your mind can kind of like, like the one of the worst things you can do is like just like pull up email right away. Like it's the first thing you do. You know what I mean? You constantly have the email box open in your like right hand corner of your three screens. Cause I'm looking at three screens right now. And like, so we've got what are my tabs? You know, we've got calendar, whatever, LinkedIn's up, because we're doing a podcast. And then I've got, let's see, WhatsApp for the development team. We've got another email box open up. There's like, some other, tabs, Excel spreadsheets, all these things kind of going on. And there's this, what was the word for it? Context switching. What I found was that I got rid of a lot of the context switching. Cause every time you're being called in a different direction, it like takes you off task. So what I did was just, and like, I think I read Atomic Habits and I just had, six tasks that I needed to do every day. Just six tasks. That's it. Write down six. If they don't get done, then you move the two that didn't get done to the next day and add another four tasks. And that's it. I don't know what happened, but I know that, guess what? The company didn't blow up. I still had podcasts scheduled. We delegated, got a few more show hosts and I don't know. I just, what I realized was that, you can do this. You can relax. You can spend time with your family. You can have balance and it's actually healthier and better for you. I came back actually 12 pounds lighter, way healthier. Blood work was way better. Blood pressure was down. And then the second I got back into America, it was weight went back up. Health issues creeped back in the same instant. So I don't know. You tell me. What's your solution?
I think that's the journey, right? I think that's really part of everyone's individual journey to solve this problem for themselves. You read any sort of self-help, any sort of business management, performance management, anything along those lines, it all starts with exercise. Literally, everyone says the same thing. You do exercise, you exercise regularly, and you do that on the regular. It's about consistency, not about length, right? Be consistent. So I started doing that and my back, my back problem's gone. That was it. I had a problem because I was sitting for like 10 plus years, 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
So back problems went away. you know, all these other benefits, my energy levels start going up, all these other things. And I was almost able to, just because of that, I was able to sort of rise above that cloud of fog and just kind of look down and be like, yeah, I'll do that today. That other stuff, I don't need to do it today. I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah, I've been progressively, each year trying to take it to the next level. Jiu-jitsu changed a lot. A lot of people say jiu-jitsu ruined my life, but it was worth it. Jiu-jitsu helps a lot for me.
Are you BJJ or?
Yeah, BJJ. It's just very addictive. Very, very addictive. But as far as like, if you want to be in shape.
Extremely technical as well.
Yeah, it's like human chess is what we call it. Human chess. Yeah. If you're not comfortable rolling around with sweaty men though and having like sweat dripping to your eyeballs and stuff like that, then
it is what it is. My brother-in-law is a black belt.
Oh, nice.
Locally,
where?
He's in Boston, actually. Boston proper. Yeah.
Who's your brother?
Who's my brother? Mike Garcia.
Okay. My coach must know him. My coach is Dan Simler, so he's out of Worcester, but he probably definitely knows. They probably all know each other.
Yeah, he's a little nuts with it. He rolls with Florian every now and then over in Brookline. He goes to City of Tong. He's gone to Thailand to train. It's craziness. I myself did martial arts for I think what like 15 years, something like that, when I was a kid. Started with Taekwondo with all the kids start with. I did that for, I don't know, like 10 years. I did Krav Maga for like 4. I gotta say, all of the martial arts I've done, Krav Maga is by far my favorite.
All right. Yeah, a lot of people say that. Of course, BJJ guys we're all going to be very, very biased and make fun of every other martial art other than our own. So that's just how it is. And I'm sure you've had those conversations with your brother. Like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll wipe the mat. We'll wipe the mat with you, Krav Maga guys. Come on, bring it into the studio. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, but, If I lay down on the ground and let you get on top of me, sure, that's wonderful.
You know? See, this is how it starts. This is how the conversation starts. Yeah, okay, whatever, guy. Yeah, bring it in. Bringing your top, bringing your black belt. You know,
in the bar, you're going to go ground in the bar? No, I don't think so.
What do you mean? Why not?
There you go.
That's great. Yeah, I had to hire a coach. I had to hire a coach who's a real doctor who graduated. I mean, I kind of went all out this year. I really was like, this is it. I'm not. And I paid so much money to hire this guy that there's no turning back. And it is like everything that I have expected it to be so far, from just like dialing, telling me what to eat, telling me when to eat it, telling me when to measure, telling me when to get on the scale, telling me what books to read, telling me what vitamins, like, I mean, like just like literally everything. And, so far it's pretty amazing. Like I'm just good at taking orders when it comes to that type of stuff. So that's what I needed.
Well, it's nice because you outsource the sort of decision-making process, the thing of it that gives us probably the most pause, and it's probably the most strenuous part of the whole process. It's not doing the thing, it's planning it and actually getting up to do it. But if you have someone there being like, come on, get up, you're like, okay, let's go. What are we doing?
Like,
I don't know.
Like every week, it's like a text message in the morning. Okay, where are you at? Did you get on the scale yet? And then it's like, and then there's like this app that's like, they've got the app dialed in. I mean, literally, if you do a rep, like if you do 10 reps, it's like, do the 10 reps quick, hit this button. It starts counting down for like 60 seconds. Okay, do the 10 reps of this. And then they literally go in and they look at what you did and they're like, okay. So then your next workout, they've modified like literally the weights, the pounds, the reps, like it's a different everything.
That's crazy. That's technology, man.
It's pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet. There still has to be a human. There still has to be like like an Austrian guy like behind it. I'm not
kidding. You got to program his accent into the app.
You're still talking with him. You're still talking with him, but you know, let's see. When are we meeting next? I got to find his, okay. So that is the hardest thing. That's very common. I didn't think you were going to say that, but I think a lot of people are dying. Yeah. Clinton DeVroe. I think I'm pronouncing his last name right. He's actually down the street from you in like Cambridge. He's one of my top engineers. He says sitting's the new smoking.
100% is. Yeah.
I'm kind of laughing. You know, I'm just I was laughing when he said that. Yes, Stefan, by the way. Stefan is my coach. Is my one of them. One of them. Not the doctor, but Stefan. But But yeah, sitting is the new smoking. I just keep saying it's such a great saying. So, Clinton, we got to call you out again. I'm going to tag you on this episode, you know, sitting is the new smoking. And back problems is not how many. I've got a pinched nerve on C6, C7 right now that I've been dealing with for a long time.
Yeah.
And I got to, you know, a lot of guys have different back problems and issues. And it's like, it's almost like we need to have like a coming together and some kind of like separate program for like, you know, IT directors, like, you know, what are we going to call it? Like squats and steak. That's Mike Dolce's book. Mike Dolce has a program called Squats and Steak. He's
marketed quite well.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the UFC diet coach. He was whatever her name's. He was one of the UFC diet coaches, but we need squats and steak and steroids. And let's see, what else can we add to this? Squat, steak, steroids, and IT, you know, something like cure your back now. But anyways,
I don't know. I'm going to have my doctor. I don't know about you, but I get really, it's very odd when you see an IT professional that's just physically impressive, just jacked in health, the full deal. It's odd. Like, I'm just trying to think back, like everyone I've met in space, none of them are like of that athletic body type.
We should change that. We should.
Exactly.
Change is about to happen. Change. I like this. The IT, forget IT stuff and like, you know, what were you talking about? You know, forget, you know, digital transformation. We want like, you know, screw that body transformation. We'll do digital transformation later on. Sorry, CEO. That's a real thing. So I could talk about this stuff all day long, and the people obviously like health and wellness is like, what are the three things that people are always marketing? Like health, wealth, and relationships. You know what I mean? So yeah, I guess we could talk about that. IT ruins your health. It ruins your relationships, and there's some money in it, but how can we? So what is the end game for IT guys? What's the end game for IT guys? Yeah, I'm just going to set up a bunch of cell phone kiosks in the middle and make a bunch of people sell cell phones in the future.
Right.
I don't know. What is it?
I think with AI now, it's really...
It's over. It's over. We're done.
No, I mean, a lot of things will be, just like the toll booth workers in Fastlane. I think it's the same thing. Technology is and always will be the ultimate disruptor, but I think it's about looking beyond the immediate and looking beyond that into, well, it is going to take away a lot of remedial jobs, but be honest, we don't really need people to answer emails anymore, right? I mean, we don't need that.
Tell me how we're doing that. Can you please fix that problem for me? How are you doing that? So are you going to your end users, hey guys, forget about email, just install, I don't know, chat.o, something, whatever. What is it?
So, I mean, a lot of these customer service platforms, I mean, they're building out their own AI models based off of the popular ones from OpenAI, et cetera. You know, Copilot's one of them from Microsoft. They're embedding that into Windows. And, you know, the goal is going to be to increase productivity, to have sort of like a digital assistant that can keep you on track, right? Mm-hmm. It's in the early stages now, but, you know, I can see where they're going with it. You know, Microsoft has already connected it to the entire Office platform. You know, you get your Teams meetings transcribed. It summarizes the transcript. It pulls out action items, summaries. It's like crazy. You know, now you think about that within a CRM system, talking about Salesforce, you know, the sales cycle is sort of like a templatized engagement model per company. And if you refine that model, you can train an AI to simply pull out specific questions from a recorded sales call. I mean, that's fantastic. That, you know, you're talking about sale deal velocity.
Okay, so I'm going to turn it around. So I'm going to turn around to you. So let's just use a typical sales cycle. I don't know.
Yeah.
Telecom, maybe Microsoft licensing. Let's use Microsoft licensing since you mentioned Microsoft. So we know that Microsoft last March or whatever jacked everyone's bill up and said, you all have to go on a 1-year agreement. There's no more month to month. Otherwise, you're going to pay 20% more. And if you don't do this, you're going to pay 40% more, whatever it is. So I'm a CSP sales rep number one. I don't know. I work at CDW, and I'm sales rep number two. I work at Crayon and whatever it is. And then the EA agreement dude, whatever.
Yeah.
Are you telling me, you as an IT director, would you respond to an AI bot? Hey, are you renewing your, you might not know, but like, hey, your renewal's coming up. Would you be interested in getting on a call and talking about, you know, doing, just making sure you're getting the best buy for your Microsoft licensing? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. A lot of the time. I mean, a lot of this is already happening. and we're not even aware of it, right? Because I mean, I've even seen conversational AI bots that do cold calls. They will literally have a voice and they'll be interacting with the caller in real.
And if it's that new Chat GPT chick.
Yeah.
Then she's better. Hey, honey. Yeah. Wow, nice shirt.
You joke, but we're not far away from that, right?
I thought it was a game changer. I was like, guys, just forget about it. The population's going down because every guy out there that's sick of women, and this is not a chauvinistic podcast. It's really not. But I was saying it to like my wife, my son. I was like, seriously, like, I was like, what? Some guy's just going to program some robot someday, just say, here's the type of wife I want. I want her to say this, look like this. I want her to respond in this way. And I don't want any problems. I was like, so forget about it. The population is going down. So I told all my kids, like, just shut the computers off now. And please just, you know, from that standpoint, it's kind of dangerous. So yeah, would I rather get a cold call from make believe, you know, it's messed up, but it's kind of true.
No, it really is. You know, I mean, really, it's when you're doing cold calling, it's just really about overcoming that objection and getting to the next stage and the next stage and the next stage. It's about forward momentum. And, you know, from what I've seen thus far, pretty damn good. And you think about, okay, well, what does it look like to, they're not going to be good as a human. I'm like, yeah, but they're that good on day one. A human, you get them in the front door, it's going to take him 6 months to get up to speed, to learn, to develop those mannerisms or speech patterns, understand the product, the value, right? It's going to take them time. The AI bot comes online. You train it from your knowledge base, from your data, from your emails, whatever, you know, whatever it is. And it's...
Or your top salespeople.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take your top sales calls.
So yeah, no.
I mean, my AI team, which I don't really want anyone to know about, we're thinking, screw this podcast. Like, maybe we should just quit and just start doing some like
AI do it.
Some AI stuff. No, but like Greg the Frenchman, who is my director of like production team in operations.
Is he French by chance?
Dude, he took my voice, used AI to like match my voice almost perfectly and make me speak in French. You can find it on one of my posts. He deep faked me as a French person.
That's crazy.
And it sounds pretty darn close to me. Like someone that doesn't know me, like my kids, they're like, I don't know, Dad, that's pretty good, you know, in French. So it could be any number of other languages is what you made me think about. So you really made me think now, you know, do I even need to do this podcast anymore? Like, can we just, this whole thing is fake, by the way. This is all AI.
It's all AI, right? Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be like, well, hey, it's come a long way, you know?
I don't know how much we've accomplished other than what we know is that, well, there's the answer to not working so hard and not being so, you know, I don't know, so involved. We've got the future, which is AI. Is there anything in that environment that, I mean, it's all very exciting. Are you a glass half full or glass half empty? Like, is like Terminator 2 really going to happen or whatever it is? Is Skynet going to take over?
Man, you went right there with it. I'm a half empty kind of guy.
Oh, Skynet's real.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's that whole, you know, military model of the sword and the shield. If you're not going to do it, someone else will. So everyone will inevitably develop this sort of, you know, this technology, regardless of the implications, regardless of the morality of it or the ethics of it. They're going to do it because humans are by nature selfish, and it's just what's going to happen, right? Some people will do it out of, you know, evil means. Other people develop it out of, you know, we have to protect ourselves, right? We, you know, someone develops an AI, you know, think about cybersecurity, an AI driven malware. I mean, it's pretty potent.
Never gets tired. Doesn't matter how many people you have, you know, working in a, yeah, doesn't matter. Remember when people used to mine gold in World of Warcraft, and like there's like people dying in basements and like, you know, of like screen burning or something. There was like some, I think there's some kid in Japan that died like mining gold for Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
And then they were selling the avatars, or they're selling the logins on eBay or something like that.
Yep. Yeah, I remember that. My buddy was deep into WoW for a while. He actually stopped because he was like, dude, it's like warping reality.
Yeah. Yeah, we just need some AI bots to mine gold for something stupid like that. That's crazy.
I mean, it's capitalism, man.
Yeah.
Well, people want to buy it. They don't want to put in the work, so they'll buy it, you know, if they can.
I wonder, you know how like we have the Bitcoin mining machines that take so much compute power and you got to spend all that money on. We should be able to like make some kind of like weird AI bot worm or something that takes over compute powder or something like that to mine stuff. But anyways,
I'm sure
there's some software guy. There's some software guy out there right now that's going, I can tell by listening to Phil Howard, he knows nothing about money. I had this like really high end, crazy software guy one time. I was talking, it was just way over my head, like way over my head. There's some people that are just like super, super smart. Yeah, he was one of them. That was way over my head.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime.
So anywho, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. What I want to say is give you the last word, actually, from an IT leadership standpoint. I think the most important thing is like, you know, take care of yourself, take a breath, learn to sell to the C-suite. So I guess my point is we should have, reach out. I would like to ask everyone if you want help with these type of things, if you want help with, I don't know, getting in shape, figuring out how to take a break. How do we take a breath? Because some people get stuck. What if you're that IT guy stuck in an organization where they just work you to death and you're the type of person that cares so much that you just will keep working to help everyone out? What do you do in that situation? Find another job, obviously, but in between now and finding another job, what do you do?
I think it's a multi-tier question, but initially I think of that Jordan Peterson. He says, learn how to become a monster, then learn how to control it. And I think that's a very simplistic and very articulate answer to that. And also getting back to your point.
What does that mean in IT though? What does that mean in IT?
I think it means taking control, being your own monster, taking control, of your own career path, of your own time, right? Defining what success looks like and working towards that, not marching to someone else's definition of it. And when you really start doing that, I think things are going to change. Opportunities are going to present themselves, or you're really going to start to see things in a different light and really, evaluate your priorities. What is really, right?
We don't talk about goal setting. I don't think we've talked about goal setting in a while. And I'm a big fan of it. I coach my guys all the time to deal with goal setting and have a personal mission statement, personal vision statement, purpose in life. And what are you working to? And what do you really want?
Super important. But a lot of people don't do that. A lot of IT leaders don't get to that point of it. And I think the human element of IT is really missed in the leadership and performance management part of it.
And tying your job to your personal success as well. So what does success look like for you in life in general? And how's your, I guess, career or job helping you reach that level, not preventing you from getting there?
It's funny you mentioned that. I also thought of those as two separate things, but until you said that, I never really thought of them as interconnected.
Because that's how everyone thinks about it. Because everyone says when you go to work, here's the stupidest saying that I always say, when you go to work, leave your personal life in the bag at the door. No one can leave their personal life in the bag at the door. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. Everybody has a personal life. Everyone has feelings. Everyone has issues that they're dealing with. Everyone has things that they're not even telling you. That's why it's so important to connect, discover, and respond with your team. So how can they not be interconnected? At least if it's, and even if it's just a job, and no one wants a job, everyone wants a career. But even if it is a job, then how is that job helping you step stone to where you want to get? And you signed on the line to help someone do a certain thing. So you better do it your best and you better do it better than everyone else and put your whole heart into it. Even if it's just emptying the trash in the hallways, you might want to put a sticker on that with a smile face that says, have a great day. Like you're not emptying the trash. Yeah. I am, Like, and everyone loves you or, whatever. And you're trying to uplift other people or whatever it is that you're doing, but yeah, they're definitely connected. And that might be a problem that people don't connect them.
Yeah, no. And I think that's also that point of connecting them and clarifying and
maybe really making that
exactly that I see that as a direct, responsibility of leadership, right? That's what it is. Making sure your team is taken care of, whatever that means. It can mean personally, it can mean professionally.
And no one's saying you can't change your role. No one. So here's what I noticed years ago is I learned to connect the two. I think it was Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek, that I, yeah, it was definitely. I read that and I was getting up every day. I was in Virginia, like Beltway of DC, Washington, DC at the time. And I was getting up every day at maybe 5:30, you know, taking a shower, whatever, little, get a cup of coffee, get in the car, drive in rush hour traffic for an hour to get to the office at 6:30 to do rookie role play at 7 o'clock, right? To then do run your morning meetings and then all the way up to standing meeting at 10 o'clock. And then it was like, you know, out in the streets, consulting, Cisco consulting, whatever, right? Then it was back to, you know, 5 after 5 o'clock, making sure all your sales reps hit 5 doors after 5 o'clock because all the gatekeepers aren't around anymore. If you remember that old rule, right? Then it's like everyone come back to the office, everyone enter everything into the SQL database, whatever that is, check all your reps out, leave, get home 7:30 at night, right? Was it fast paced? Was it a part in my life that I loved? Was I learning a lot of things? Was it like totally like crazy, like corporate, whatever, and you know, and all this like work hard, play hard type of mentality and everything. And yeah, it was that. And was I doing better than in the retail space? Absolutely. But it got to the point where I was saying, this is just not, you can't do this. Like, what, where do I want to go in life? And then, so I read the 4-Hour Workweek and it was like, okay, I changed my job and I changed the way that my job looked at me internally. So I basically, I took more of a, like a channel manager role where you work with like other MSPs and vendors from a more consulting approach. And it wasn't just like, you know, direct sales reps running out into the field and trying to, you know, sell everybody everything, you know what I mean? And it was a much more consulting, sit on the same side of the table as the buyer approach. So that was the first change. And then it was like, okay, now go to my boss and say, well, you know, this driving to the office every day, that's just absolutely ridiculous. Why do I need to do that? Like, that's just a waste of time. Why don't you just let me start working right away? And if I bring in these results, and we do, and this is why I'm a big fan of management by business objectives for IT directors and CTOs and everything, connect your job to goals and business objectives that they want, but then allow that to give you freedom. So if I do this, this, and this, can I work from home 2-3 days a week?
Yeah.
If you hit those goals, yeah, no, you can do whatever the heck you want, man. Okay, cool. And then you hit those goals and you know, you give them goals that you know you can hit to begin with. And then you're saying, hey, you know what? This is kind of stupid. I'm doing so good. Why don't I just raise it up another notch and just never come into the office?
It's about, yeah, the closed loop there on goal setting and driving change and really, you know, setting the bar, you know, if this, then that. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Or, you know, hey, if we raise production by this, can you give me this much more in budgeted dollars? Can I get an extra guy on my team? Can I get an extra, you know, can we do this? And then can we drive it even more? And can we do more and more and more? Now, you said you had a really good team that you did a lot with 3 people. So I'm dying. I just remembered now. I'm dying. We'll leave it in this. What the heck did you guys do where you could manage that many people with 3 people? It was a school. So,
yep. It was okay. A school. Well, I mean, with a school, it's a very wide application of IT services and technology. We have all the, you know, a typical school these days. It was a professional school, so it was a graduate level. Yeah. It wasn't like kindergarten class.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking about classrooms that have state of the art AV technology, basically servers, systems, all that kind of stuff, AV gear. Each room had its own network closet for the AV gear. You had a, you know, computer lab. You had computers all over the place. Entire staff had their computers. We have multiple programs that everyone uses for development, for marketing, for contact, for CRM systems, etc., ERP system. You know, all these things. We all had. There's no easy answer. I mean, there's no magic sauce. We all wore multiple hats, and we all had to become A players. Or that was it, right? There wasn't a choice. We all had to kind of band together to, you know, to look at the workload and say, all right, who's going to do what? We got to divide this up. We got to figure it out. It just so happened that all three of us were A players. I had the benefit of being mentored by an amazing person who really ingrained in me the values of customer service and really having a solution mindset. If you define the problem properly, the solution will follow. And that's where my whole kind of outlook on problem solution comes from. That's the genesis of the idea. You know, I had three.
Define the problem based on the customer and the solution will become clearer, or at least we'll know what we're solving at least.
I'm going to take it one step further. Not only that, but look at the solution as a whole, holistically throughout the environment, because it's very easy to say, this is the issue, this is the problem, without having foresight into the downstream effects of the solution. So having a solution mindset, really perfect example, like, yeah, there's a, you know, we have this form and it gives us XYZ data, right? And the data goes into a sheet and we got the data and it's fantastic, but it's not formatted in a way that our ERP can ingest it, right? That's not good, because now we're sacrificing the reportability, the visibility, the data-driven aspects of it. What is the benefit of having that? Oh, it's huge. We definitely need that. Okay, so what do? We adjust. You know, having that solution mindset allowed us to tackle these problems at the root cause and really create whatever time we were spending on finding solutions to problems, we were solving problem for multiple areas. So I really took the time. It was all time, you know, doing the discovery, thinking, really, really being patient with it. That's what be my takeaway or my advice to anyone. Be patient in the discovery process, because no matter how smart you are, the process, it requires respect.
Slower is faster.
Fast is slow. Slow is smooth. That's right.
I've learned that too many times, the hard way. Yeah. And, cheaper is not necessarily, cheaper does not equal saving either.
It doesn't. We come across that all the time. And it's like, oh, we know it's going to suck in the long run. It's just, we need this now. It's like, all right, you know about it. You're telling me, you know, I get it. We'll just do it. But I'm going to still tell you, I told you so later.
Oh, man. Man, Sonny, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Any final words of wisdom to the listeners out there?
Oh, man. Ah, now you're putting me on the spot. Now I've got to come up with something prolific.
No, it doesn't have to be prolific at all. It could just be like, I don't know. Yeah, it could be the finger. It could be like, hey, you, I'm talking to
Miss,
you.
Miss, 1 second, and please. User. Miss, 1 second.
Don't one second. Be that Let guy.
Don't be the guy in the kiosk.
Don't be the guy that sells international roaming that doesn't even exist in the world.
So true. Yeah,
that, oh no, that router. You just throw it on the plane. It's gonna come right in through a Cairo airport. You know, it's plug and play, bro. Plug and play.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure, Phil. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much.